what I wanted to start today and then resume. Next week there'll be no shir, but the following week we'll resume Avodah Zarah for a couple of Sundays, and then the weekend, the Memorial Day weekend, I'll be giving shir, and I will continue on this topic. And the topic really is about the process of halachic change, which is really sort of a major topic. And it's one that I think we think about a lot more than perhaps people thought about 100 or 150, certainly 200 years ago, but it is certainly a very important halachic topic. And there is sometimes a perception, not undeservedly so, there are more sheets down here, there is a perception occasionally that the halacha is somewhat inflexible, which is true and it's not true, but at least to sort of understand what's going on, it helps to sort of start at the bottom. So what I wanted to do today was to look at really a small number of sugyos in Shas and to sort of grapple with what the Rishonim, the landscape that Rishonim are facing, because they have to deal with, they have sort of a three-part structure, and they have to fit all dinim derabanan into this three-part structure. When I say a three-part structure, I mean there are three rules for change, or three different, presumably different kinds of categories of rabbinic enactments, which are subject to different requirements in order to, for them to change, or in one case, perhaps they can't change at all. From a conceptual perspective, it's somewhat interesting. Rav Schechter always likes to talk about, he's very a big fan of saying, called the Tikkun Rabbanon Kein Daraisa Tikkun, that Dinim de Rabbanon tend to be patterned upon Dinim Daraisa, which to some extent sometimes works, it doesn't maybe always work. But the interesting thing is that when one thinks about Dinim Daraisa, it is interesting to try to figure out what the where these rabbinic enactments sort of fit in. And I want to sort of start just by outlining, it's not in the Makaros, but the Rambam's at least, the Rambam's construction of Torah Shebaal Peh very briefly, because that at least serves as the starting paradigm for change. The Rambam, in his introduction to the Perush HaMishnayos, and in a, I would say, a more abridged form, in the first parak of Hilchos Mamrim, in the Mishneh Torah, so Rambam describes five categories of Torah Shebaal Peh, three of which are De'oraisa, two of which are the Rabbanon. For right now, I'm not interested in the Din of the Rabbanon. We are going to focus on Din of the Rabbanon and change, but for the Rambam's sort of hierarchy, it's the De'oraisas that are much more interesting. Now, two things that are not in this hierarchy of Dinim Doraisa. Number one, obviously, Torah Shebichsav, because the Rambam is categorizing Torah Shebaal Peh into five categories. That's number one. And number two, what's also interesting, but not our topic, but I'd like to point this out to my students at Yeshiva, is that Agadah doesn't fit anywhere either. Now, if you know what the Rambam's view and the Gaonim's view on Agadah generally was, it makes perfect sense why it doesn't appear in the structure of Torah Shebaal Peh, because Agadah is not Mesorah and Agadah is not normative. And therefore, it doesn't belong in this structure. Everything in this structure is either through received tradition, and it's law, so it's binding, or even if it's not through received tradition, however it comes to be, it's also normative. It's also binding legally, but Agadah doesn't fit in those categories. It's neither Mesorah, nor, perhaps even more simply, Agadah is not normative. The Rambam, somewhere in this Perush HaMishnayos, observes that there's no such thing as Hachra, there's no such thing as Psak, when it comes to non-halachic issues. So if there's a machlokas in Chazal and a machlokas in the Mishonim as to whether a God operates with Hashkacha Pratis or not, there's no such thing as saying, well, we hold of Hashkacha Pratis. Some people might believe in Hashkacha Pratis, some people not believe in Hashkacha Pratis, but you can't talk about Psak Halacha. So the Rambam says that there are three categories of Dinim Doraisa and two Derabbanon. Leave aside the Derabbanons. Number one, category one Doraisa, is what the Rambam says are Halacha L'Moshe Misinais. These are received traditions which have no basis or connection to Scripture. They're not learned from or derived from Scripture. They're not explaining something in Scripture. They exist as independent dinim. Classic example, lavud. You're building a machitz on Shabbos, you're building a machitz on Sukkah, and you have gaps in the wall. So the halacha says that if you have a gap of less than three tvachim between, let's say, two columns, that gap is considered closed. That's called the principle known as lavud. And there are a whole host of dinim, the Gemara quotes that halacha l'moshe misinai. Lavud is not based, it's not derived from any pasuk in the Torah. Lavud is not explaining any pasuk in the Torah. It's just a basic legal principle that's necessary for operating in certain areas of halacha. The second category, the Rambam says, are what he calls Perushim HaMekubalim, received interpretations. And these are very much connected to Scripture. In many ways, they're explaining passages in Scripture. And the Rambam says that, gives us examples of that, would be Ayin Tachas Ayin. The Rambam says you may find 10 derivations in the Gemara of how do you know that Ayin Tachas Ayin is not to be taken literally, but rather it is Mamon. But the Rambam says everybody agrees. There's no opinion in Chazal that says Ayin Tachas Ayin is literal, is Mamish. Or the Rambam says Priyetz Hadar. The Gemara and Sukkah has a number of very interesting derivations for how do you know that a Priyetz Hadar is an Esrog. But the Rambam says no one says that a Priyetz Hadar is a lemon, is a pepper, is this or that. Everybody knows that Priyetz Hadar is an Esrog, and the only question is how do you know that Priyetz Hadar is an Esrog. Now, with regards to those two categories of Dinim D'Oraisa, the Rambam makes one explicit claim, and one other claim is obvious, even though it isn't stated. He says that you never find machlokas by such laws. Never. Now, there's a problem with that, because the Chavos Yar collects like 36 places where there's a machlokas and halacha Moshe Sinai. But nonetheless, the Rambam says, by things that are received tradition from Sinai, and for the Rambam, those two categories are the only things of Torah Shebaal Peh that come from Sinai. Everything else that is the Oraisa in Torah Shebaal Peh does not come from Sinai. Anything that is not either a Perusha Mekubal or is not Halach L'Moshe Misinai, it might be the Oraisa, but it is not Misinai. Now, the Rambam says you will not find Machlokas in those things that are Misinai, number one. And the reason he says that is because the Rambam is engaged in a polemic against the Gaonim. He was very upset by the Gaonim because they suggested, and perhaps in their polemic with the Karaites, that the reason why you have so much Machlokas in Chazal is because they forgot things. But everything goes back to Sinai, and the only reason you find machlokas is because people forgot things. And the Rambam says, Chas v'shalom, by adopting such a position, you are being matil dofi b'chachmei Masorah. You're casting aspersions on the Chachmei Masorah because you're saying they basically forgot almost everything. Right? When you strip away dinim d'rabbanan from the Gemara, and then you look at the Raisas, look how many times they argue and how many times they don't argue. Right? So the Rambam says, how could you say that? So the Rambam says, no. Machlokas does not emerge from forgetting, from not properly learning. Anything that is part of the Kabbalah, part of Misora, the Rambam.
It's not from Sinai, the Raisa. Where is it from?
Well, I'll get to it. I haven't gotten to the third category yet. Oh. But the Rambam says that if there's that these things there is no machlokas by. What the Rambam, I don't know if he states this explicitly, but I think is sort of intuitively obvious, is that these things are immutable. They're not subject to change. They're not subject to a Beis Din ruling otherwise, almost by definition, because they have a Kabbalah. When you look at the Tosefta in Chagiga, it's quoted, I think, in the Gemara in Sukkah, I think it's also found in Sanhedrin, about the process of asking a Shaila. So the Tosefta says that a person would go to the Beis Din Sheva Iro, and would ask them, what's the din? And if the Beis Din didn't know, so they would, and if they didn't hear, if lo shamu, and shamu means shmua, means a Kabbalah, then they would take one representative of the Beis Din and the guy, and they would go to the appellate court, and they would ask them. And if they didn't know, then they'd go, that was the Beis Din and that Shevet, then they would go to the first Beis Din in the Harabayis of 23. And if they didn't know, one representative, and so on. When they got to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, so the Tosefta says, Im Shamu, if they had a received tradition, a Shmua, Omer Lahem, they would tell them this is the Din. And if not, so now we get to the third category, the Sanhedrin would start to engage in Masa Mata, and they would try to figure out what is the din here, based upon either Svara, based upon reading Psukim, based upon the Midosh HaTorah Nidreshes Behen, and interpreting the Psukim with them. And then what they would do is they would have a discussion, they'd have a debate, and then they'd take a vote. They take a vote, and majority ruled, and that was the end of the issue. Until Rabu Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel Shelosh Shimshu called Tzarkon, v'Rafsa Machlokes b'Yisrael v'Nasa Torah Kishtei Soros. So until the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel, who did not somehow, the system didn't function anymore, and therefore that's why we start to get really widespread Machlokes, because up until Shammai and Hillel themselves, we have one recorded Machlokes running four generations, the Machlokes about Smicha on animals on Yom Tov, and then Shammai and Hillel argued about three or four things, and then it comes to their students, the amount of recorded debates that we have, you know, absolutely explodes in number. Now, that third category of what a Beis Din interprets, which is not a received tradition, but they are expounding Scripture, very much lahavdil, the way the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution. So those are dinim d'oraisa. That may be what the Rambam refers to often as divrei sofrim, which are dinim d'oraisa, which sort of occupies this little bit of a gray zone, but those are certainly dinim d'oraisa. But They are not Misinai. But not only that, but there's something even more important. If you look in the Rambam...
What about Tayag? Tayag Mitzvah.
So those are that's Torah Shebichsav. Written Torah is also...
But it's Misinai.
Correct. Written Torah and two categories of Torah Shebaal Peh are Misinai. But, well, actually, I should be correct. Written Torah is from Avraham Samoav, not Misinai. But that's a technicality.
Yeah.
But from Moshe Rabbeinu, we have Torah Shebichsav, that includes the Tayag Mitzvahs, and then we have two categories Torah Shebaal Peh, Perushim HaMekubalim and Halacha LaMoshe Misinais. One connected to Scripture, one disconnected from Scripture, but all other dinim d'oraisa are d'oraisa, but they're not Misinai.
What other dinim?
So the Rambam would say, anytime you find a machlokas about an issue, pick any, open up, I don't know, I just learned Maseches Pesachim. Find a machlokes about whether or not you get malkos. You get malkos if you shecht the carbon Pesach and you still own chametz at the time, on Erev Pesach. What if they shecht the carbon tamid and you still own chametz? So Rabbi Huda says that lo sheshchana chametz dam zivchi, zivchi hameyuchadli, that you also get malkos if you have chametz when they shecht the carbon tamid. But the other Tanaim disagreed. So presumably that Rabbi Huda holds it in Daraisa, but it's not Misinai, because otherwise the Rambam says they couldn't be machlokes about it, because they didn't forget. So
wouldn't that be part of the Torah Shebichsav?
No, because it's an
based on pasuk.
No, but it's an interpretation. What does it mean, dam zivchi?
Of the pasuk.
So that's not Torah Shebichsav. Interpretation is Torah Shebaal Peh.
Interpretation of
Torah Shebichsav is Torah Shebaal Peh. By definition, Torah Shebichsav is only what is written.
If he says, so that means he's learning. That's what is meant by the Torah Shebichsav.
Correct.
So his interpretation is Torah Shebichsav.
But all Torah Shebaal Peh, except for Halacha LaMoshe Misinai, by definition, is interpretation of Torah Shebichsav.
Right.
But it's called Torah Shebaal Peh.
Okay.
It's only Torah Shebichsav if there's no other possible interpretation
of Mishnah. So Torah Shebaal Peh is Misinai.
No, Rabbi Yehuda, the whole part of Torah Shebaal Peh is Misinai, but an interpretation of which there's machlokas about, the Rambam says, can't be Misinai because they wouldn't have forgotten. Yes, because if it were a Kabbalah, the Rambam says there wouldn't be machlokas. You can disagree with the Rambam's position, and I think it's a little bit overstated. I think if you push the Rambam to a corner, he might admit that sometimes they forgot a few things. Maybe there's a debate about it, but fundamentally, interpretation of Pshuto Shel Mikra, when there's room for dispute, that's what Torah Shebaal Peh is. Now, it's one of the arguments Hanoch Albeck points out, correctly so, in his Mavol LeMishnah, very early on. He points out that, of course, there always had to have been Torah Shebaal Peh. You can't have a written text without a Torah Shebaal Peh, without a tradition of interpretation. Right, much of Torah Shebaal Peh is not in its conception is not primarily about things that are purely oral Torah, disconnected from Scripture. It's about the interpretation of the text, and since a text typically lends itself to multiple possible interpretations, even if you have a received tradition about what the text means, that's a Perush HaMekubal. It's to tell you how to read the text, but that's Torah Shebaal Peh. And postmodernists might even say there is no...
Doesn't Chazal tell us that all interpretations of it is Misinai?
So you're going to ask me, what does the Rambam do with certain agados that claim, that look, the Gemara in Bracha says that Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, Halacha, agados all Misinai. Right, but the problem is that's an agadic statement that can't be taken at face value because Nevi'im and Ksuvim were presumably not Misinai. I work with that general assumption. So I know that there are agados in the Gemara that would suggest the Gaonic view, but I'm just describing what the Rambam's view is. As a prelude to now talk about that third category, the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is interpretation of Torah Shebichsav, if you take a look in the Rambam, on the back side of the sheet, and the Rambam in Hilchos Ma'amrim, it's sort of Roman numeral 2, the second source. Just the first halacha for the moment. The Rambam writes as follows: based in gadol shedarshu ba'achas min hamidos, kefi ma shenira be'einehem, shadin kach, v'donu din. Based in engages in interpretation of scripture, and they come up with interpretation. V'omar achareihem based in acher, and a later based in another generation arises. V'nira lo tam acher listar oso. They think that scripture should be read differently. They think that it should be logically extrapolated from differently. They can undo the din of the previous Sanhedrin, and they interpret as they see fit. Shenemar el hashofet asher yiyeh bayamim hahem ein chachayv alechas ela achar based in shebedorecha. So there's really an amazing statement here the Rambam is claiming, is that when you're talking about Torah Shebal Peh, which is not Mesorah, but which is interpretation, the Rambam says that any Beis Din in any generation can overturn the interpretation of a previous generation if they think Scripture means something different. Now, you can't say this, obviously, by Perushim HaMekubalim, by Shmua, by a received tradition, but by that third category, which, statistically speaking, if you were to actually break the Gemara down, I would say comprises a significant majority of rabbinic literature outside of Dinim Derabbanan, which, by themselves, comprise even a greater majority. So the Rambam says that all those Dinim are subject to change, and the Rambam does not even require a Beis Din that is Gadol B'Chachma over Minyan.
Just Shebedorach.
The Beis Din, right. Presumably, you know, we'll assume for the moment, we'll have to discuss this, presumably you're dealing with people who have authority. How you define authority, let's for the moment say people who have smicha, real smicha, not contemporary smicha, but smicha ish mipi Yishai Moshe Rabbeinu, or its equivalent. So,
nobody
has. Well, today we don't have that. I have not seen this inside, but one of my chaverim quotes the amachlokes between the Chazon Ish and Rav Chanan Wasserman, whether a Beis Din today theoretically could do the same thing. He argues, I don't know if this is true, the Chazon Ish says, yeah, a Beis Din today could in fact be done and so to the previous generations. But any Beis Din that do that today would have the chutzpah to think that they were greater than the previous generation would be api kursim, and they'd be disqualified to be Dayanim.
But he doesn't mention this Smicha issue.
What's that? Who?
Rambam.
He doesn't say, although in the context of Hilchos Mamrim, I think it's pretty clear. In other words, a Beis Din, a real Beis Din, if you want to talk about that, is almost by definition one which has smicha. Whether he would require a Sanhedrin HaGadol as opposed to any Beis Din of Smuchim or the recognized, that I don't know, but I think it's, what this claim about the Chazon Ish being made would be acknowledging that maybe you don't. So we'll eventually going to talk about either the end of today, the beginning of the next time we reconvene on this topic, about the Samchus of the Bavli and that's role, because that's really what matters to us in terms of addressing our question today. But first I want to sort of lay out the conceptual framework. So the Rambam has basically two categories of Torah Shebal Peh, the mutable and the immutable. The immutable would be categories 1 and 2, Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai and Perushim HaMekubalim, and the mutable would be those things that are derived through interpretation. Okay. So now, I want to turn our attention really to Dinim Derabbanan. So let's come back to first present what the problem that we face is. The Mishnah in Adios says the following. The Mishnah, after recording three disputes between Shammai, Hillel, and the Chachamim who disagreed with both Shammai and Hillel, and we don't rule like either Shammai or Hillel, so the question is, why bother mentioning, why does the Mishnah mention minority opinions? That's a sort of a broader question. It's kind of interesting because the Mishnah asks that question. In fact, if you believe, as I do, Chanoch Halbeck, that Adios represents the first redacted Masechta, first attempt at sort of compiling the Mishnayos, it comes in the fifth Mishnah in the history of Mishnayos being created, which is sort of setting out the program. Why do we record minority opinions? So the Mishnah says the following: the Lama Maskirin Divrei Yachad Beim Hamarubim, Hovo Vein Halacha Ala Kedivrei Hamarubim. You always paskin like the majority, so why even bother mentioning a minority opinion? You should let it sort of disappear into the sands of time. So the Mishnah says, and it's not clear what this means, but it's not my interest for now. Shem Yira based in Estifra Yochid, some have don't have the Vav Yismochalav, some have Vyismochalav. So it seems something about another based in relying upon a minority opinion of a previous generation. Now, I don't really care about this part of the Mishnah. It's the punchline that's interesting. That's important for our discussion. She'ein based in Yachalavatel Divrei based in Chaveru Ad Shehiya Gadol Imenu B'Chachma Over Minyan. A based in cannot overturn, cannot be Mavatel, the words of a fellow based in, which usually mean a previous based in, unless it is greater in Chachma and in Minyan. Hayagadol mimena b'chachma avolo b'minyan, b'minyan avolo b'chachma, eina yochal levatel dvarv ad shiagadol mimena b'chachma over minyan. Okay, so I'm not sure exactly, this is one, there are two criteria that are introduced here in order for a based in to overturn a previous based in's decision. It has to be gadol b'chachma, which certainly we understand what it means. The Mishnah is also assuming, the Mishnah is also an implicit denial of an axiomatic principle of Yerida Sadoros, because if the Mishnah believed that you read this Hadaris is axiomatic and definitionally, what's the point? You never have a Gadol Hachaminyan close the book on any change in Beis Din's interpretation. So that, presumably, the Mishnah doesn't subscribe axiomatically to the notion of you read this Hadaris. The question, what does it mean to be Gadol Baminyan, is a more interesting question, because, you know, we have an idea that Dinei Mamonos is B'Shlosha, but if you have 10 people, or 9 people, or 11 people, that's better than doing B'Shlosha. The Gemara says the more Dayanim you have in a matter, the better it is. It's not exactly like a committee, but rather it's a voting system, and you have more, and you might have people who have more insights. It's better that you have more Dayanim. But there is a cap. I don't think you can be Mosif. In fact, there's a funny Sifrei on the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, where it says that Rashi says that they were Tarchanim. They used to give Moshe Rabbeinu such a hard time. If one saw he was losing Medin, he said, Mosef ani aleichem edim, Mosef ani aleichem dayanim. So edim, we understand, he brings more witnesses, you know, more evidence. But what is this Mosef ani, Mosefni dayanim? It's the idea that, you know, party, the troublemaker, no, 3 dayanim is not enough for me. I want 7 dayanim. Right? So, but more Dayanim, so the Ramban talks about that, but the idea of more Dayanim is generally a good thing, but the Beis Din does cap out. It caps out at 71. There's no Beis Din big, as far as I know, you can't keep adding past 71. So, how do you have one Sanhedrin that's Gadol Baminyan, unless you say that sometimes it's clear, maybe the Sanhedrin didn't have everybody there, so maybe sometimes there were more people, like the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that the Dayanim and Lishkas Agazis had to always be 23 people in Lishkas Agazis. And if you wanted to go out, it's like when you daven, they're ready, they make you, or you don't want to daven now, they make you a minion, you have to count before you leave that there are 10 people. So if you had to take care of personal affairs, so you wanted the Dayanim and the Lishkas Agazis, you have to make sure that enough people were left behind. So does it mean, well, let's say, okay, there were 23 people, there were 35 people, and they made Xera. And is that what it means? Ah, so that one, you need 37 Dayanim to overturn it. Okay, and what that would mean, though, if that's what it means, that if there were 71 Dayanim who made Xera, that Xera is simply irrevocable. Unless you say that Gadol B'Minyan means equal or greater than. Okay, I don't know about that. And the Mishnah does say literally Gadol B'Chacham Minyan. Okay, but whatever, however you define it, yes?
About Mutadorot, so I think there is a distinction between Kedusha and authority. When Moshe Rabbeinu makes Micha on Yoshua, Natan Mehodo alav. So Moshe Rabbeinu is like sun, Yoshua is like Levan. So Kedusha, Mehod go down. From Yoshua to Atniel, Atniel go down. In Kedusha.
Okay.
But he put two hands of him, so it means that Micha is not, Alacha is like Yoshua. So in a Dorot, Malach HaDorot, the Malach now is like Atniel, and not like Yoshua. So the Kedusha go down, and the authority goes up until Mashiach comes.
Okay, so it could. We have a principle, Hilchas HaKavasarai. That may or may not be based upon being greater in Chachma. It could be just that Hilchas HaKavasarai, that the later people always see everything that was in front of them. But fine, whatever it is, it's certainly clear for the point of halachic authority that it is not axiomatic that later generations can't have greater authority than earlier generations. And implied from the Mishnah is not just greater authority, even greater Chachma. Okay.
What I want to say, excuse me a second, that's why we learn, yes, when we keep the Kedusha from generation authority, that's why, although we pass in like Moshe Feinstein, but we still learn the Kedusha because Kedusha of the Rambam is higher because it's closer to Sinai.
Okay.
So that's why we never, even the previous generation, although we pass in like the last one, but every word was said in first generation is Kedusha.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the Mishnah doesn't respond to the question of Vein Avraham Kedivrei Hamrubim.
It says something. I'm choosing not to deal.
Maybe it's tangential.
The way I think the Ravid reads that line, Shemira based on Esther Vayachas Machalav, sounds as if normally you can't overturn a previous Beis Din unless you're Gadol B'Chachaminyan. But if there's a Shas Hadchak and there was a minority opinion on that Beis Din that ruled the other way, then you can adopt the opinion. That's one. If you don't have the Vav there, then you can read that way. I think that's the Ravid's reading. Because it's not our interest for now. In other words, the premise of the Mishnah is that to overturn Divrei Beis Din Chaver, you need Gadol B'Chachma of a minion. That's the, now, and the Gemara does in fact follow this up in a couple of sugyas in Shas. The Gemara Moed Katan has a discussion about the laws of Tosefes Shvius. A certain amount of time before the Shvius year begins, you're not allowed to do certain kinds of, you're not going to do planting of grain because it's not going to grow in time, but plowing around the trees and taking care of of certain things you might want to do. So there is a din of Tosefes Shvius. So the Gemara says that on the second line, there's a machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, how much before Rosh Hashanah you're not allowed to plow, let's say, in a Seder Elon, around the trees. So then on the second line, Amar Rishim ben Pazi, Amar Bishua ben Lev, Mishrim bar Kapar, this is Moed Katan Gimel Amid Beis. So the second line, Rabban Gamliel Beis Dino, Nimnu al Shnei Prakam Halalu Ubitlam. Rabban Gamliel and his Beis, and Rabban Gamliel, who was, even if this is Rabban Gamliel Zaken, it's Hillel's grandson. And if it's Rabban Gamliel, I suspect it's more likely the later Rabban Gamliel of Yavne. Mm-hmm. So he's his great-great-grandson. So Rabban Gamliel and his Beis Din ruled, they took account on these two prakim, this periods before Rosh Hashanah, that you're not allowed to work the fields. Ubitlam. They've invalidated them, and you could work the fields up until Rosh Hashanah. Amar le Rabbi Zeira, Rabbi Abov, Amar le Rabbi Shlakish, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabban Gamliel, Beis Dino, Heichi Matzu, Mavatli Takanta, the Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. How could they be mevatel takana meishel vatnan and based in yochel levatel different based in chavera ela in ken gotham menu b'chachma v'minyan. So the assumption here, one way or the other, is that Rabban Gamliel Beis Dino were not on the same level as Hillel Beis Dino or Shammai Beis Dino or Hillel v'Shammai Beis Dino, and therefore how could they do it? So ishtomim kisha achada, whoever was asked the question, Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Abo, froze for 1 second. He had to think of the answer. Amar le, Amor, we can say, he doesn't know this as a tradition, he's suggesting, Kach hisnu b'nehem, kolarot silavata yovo v'yivato, that a Beis Din can make a takana contingent. They can say that we are interested in this takana, but if another Beis Din wishes to annul it, they see different circumstances, then it's not binding. Okay, so in that case, it's not good. You don't need Gadol B'Chachma Minyan because the original Takana allowed a lesser Beis Din to undo it. Similarly, the Gemara says as follows in Gittin, Tashma de Amar Shmuel Hai Prizbala Ubuna de Dainehi. A Prizbal is the Achilles heel of the Dayanim. He doesn't explain why, but presumably if you when we discuss halachic change today, so sometimes the radical proponents of change often say, ah, Prizbal! You see what the rabbis can do? It's a little complicated. It's not so simple, but nonetheless, Shmuel obviously must have faced similar issues of his balabatim complaining. So Shmuel says, it's umbo de dayenihu, I ayasher chayel, if I could muster the strength, avatline, I would be mevatel the whole takana prosbal. So the Gemara says, avatline, v'ho'ein based in yochal avatel, diri based in chaver, elim king gold ha'imenu b'chachma minyan. So hachi ka'amar. No, what Shmuel meant is, im ayasher chay, yosem hilo avatline, if I could pull together a based in, and we could be smarter and greater than hilo, then I would do away with prosbal. Okay, so clearly the Gemara has a concept that has a set, and these two examples are things that are soon to be Gzeiros Midrabanan, Takanos Midrabanan, and these things you need a Gadol B'Chachma of a minion in order to annul. Okay, now, next sugya, which presents twofold problem for us, two more categories. You all have heard of Yain Akum. You've all heard of Bishul Akum. See, you can't eat the wine touched by non-Jews. You can't eat the food cooked by non-Jews. We've learned about Shechar Shel Akum, the beer of non-Jews, where you can and can't drink it. We'll learn about Chalav Akum, Gvinas Akum. So how many of you have heard of Shemen Akum? The oil of non-Jews. I don't mean oil that might have non-kosher ingredients. Let's say olive oil produced by non-Jews. The answer is, if you haven't learned the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, and if you've learned all of your Adaya but never learned Avodah Zarah, you've never heard of Shemen Shel Akum. Because Shemen Shel Akum is mentioned in the Gemara, but apparently it never took root. And the Mishnah mentions Shemen Shel Akum, and it says, we haven't read the Mishnah yet, it's coming up, we're almost there, it's the thing on the Amud that we're on right now, actually, is that Rabbi Huda Nasi, it's actually assumed to be Rabbi Nasi's grandson, Rabbi Huda Nasiya, and his Beis Din were Matir Shemen Shel Akum. They did away with the Gzeira, which appears to have gone back to either Doniel, Rav claims, but we're going to leave that aside. And Daniel Obeistino Gazur al Hashemen. Remember, Daniel was the one who asked for the salad, right? He was the one who wouldn't eat the Pasbag HaMelech. He insisted upon having the Zeronim. So he was the first, for those of you who are familiar with that ritual. So it dates back to our ancestor Daniel. So Rav says that Daniel Obeistino Gazur al Hashemen. But then the Gemara says whatever it says, and then apparently it's Talmid Shammai and Hillel, who made the Takana that they had in the time of the Mishnah of Shemen Shalakum. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and his Beis Din were matir that. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was he was very left-wing modern Orthodox. He was matir a lot of things. He was matir two major things. He wanted to be matir a third thing, and they said, don't do that, or they're going to call you a Beis Din Sharia, they're going to call you a permissive Beis Din. He shouldn't have to fail, but Yosef ben Yoezer in Adrios, in Periches, testified about three things that he was makel on, and they called him Yosef Sharia. Yosef the permitter. So this always seems to have been this bias against rabbis permitting things. But be that as it may, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, the Gemara asks, Heichi Matzi in the Mishri Takanta Talmid Shammai v'Hillel. How could he have permitted a takana that was made by the students of Shammai and Hillel? And Shemen Shalakum was supposed to be one of the Yud Ches Davar. So before we read on, just the backdrop to that. The Mishnah in Shabbos in the first parak talks about Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Garon. He was an important figure. He saved Sefer Yecheskel because he expounded and interpreted away the stiros between Yecheskel and Sefer Vayikra. And there were a number of gzeros that were made that day, Yud Ches Davar, were made in the Aliyah of Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Garon. And the Mishnah doesn't list the 18 things. There appear to be multiple sets of 18. But the Gemara lists 18 things, where there was a Machlokas, Beis Shammai Beisela, and Beis Shammai 1. Not where we paskin like Beis Shammai, but Beis Shammai got the upper hand, right? It sounds like they did a head count. The students of Beis Shammai saw an opportunity. Whoa, okay, who's here? Let's talk about these issues we're waiting to talk about. And so they would go there a bunch of things, and one of them was Shemen Shalakum. So the Gemara says, how could Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya permit such a thing? That was question number one. They weren't Gadol B'chach V'minyan, and you need that to be matir a previous Beis Din's ruling. But here's the new piece of information. V'od, but there's another problem. Meaning, even if they had been Gadol B'chach V'minyan, Ha'amar Rabba Barchana Amar B'Yochanan, Bakol Yochal Levatel Beis Din Divrei Beis Din Chavero, any Beis Din can be Mevatel on any matter. The issue, ruling of another Beis Din, Chutz Mishmona Osar Davar, except for the 18 things, Shafilu Yavo Eliyahu Vestino in Shomelo. You could have one of the greatest Batei Din. Eliyahu Navi comes with his Beis Din. Doesn't matter. Eliyahu Navi, we're not interested in what you have to say. Okay? The Yud Ches Davar, they're not touchable.
Why?
What's that?
Why?
That's what we have to figure out. Okay. So Amar of Misharshia, Matam. Rav Misharshia says, what is the reason? Now, it's not clear. So, he says, what's the reason, presumably, for the Yud Ches Davar? That's what it sounds like. Why can't you be Mata Yud Ches Davar? Hoil upashat isuro berov Yisrael. Because the Isser took root. It became an Yisrael. Shemen lo pashat isuro berov Yisrael. Shemen, turns out, did not actually take root. The Amar Vishmo Ba'aba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yashvu Rabosenu Ubadku al Shemen Shalopashat Isur Bav Yisrael. A couple of the Chachamim went out and they did a public survey and they saw how many people were observing Shemen Shalakim. And apparently it hadn't taken widespread root. It wasn't Pashta Barov Yisrael. And Visamchu Rabosenu, I presume Rabosenu, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and his Beis Din, were Somech al Divrei Rabbi Shim Gamliel of al Divrei Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok, Shehoyu Omrim. You cannot make a gzera. Beis Din is not supposed to make a gzera unless a majority of the community are capable of observing it. Now, it would seem, but it's not clear, even if this answer of the Gemara was to explain why you can undo this, why you can't undo Yud Ches Davar normally, but this one you can undo, meaning the Yud Ches Davar mostly were Pashta Yisur and Berov Yisrael, but this one, Shemen Shalakim, wasn't. So that doesn't do away with two questions so far, it only does away with one question. That's why somebody could theoretically do away with one of the Yud Ches Davar. But it doesn't explain why a lesser Beis Din could do away with anything of another Beis Din, unless you assume that the Gemara's Teretz was that that if it's lo pashta berov Yisrael, then another Beis Din, even of inferior ability, can also undo it. So, what it would appear One thing is very clear in terms of three pieces of data that we have so far. Number one, there are gezeros that can be undone. I'm using the term gezeros, I shouldn't even jump the gun on that. There are rulings of a beis din, one beis din, that may be undone by another beis din, but only if they have gadol b'chachma of a minyan. There are rulings of a beis din that may never be undone by another beis din, even Elio beis dino, and that would appear to be the yud ches dafar. And then there are apparently rulings that may be undone by another beis din, even if they are not gadol b'chacham of a minyan, the proof to that being Shem and Shalakum and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and his beis din. The problem that the Rishonim all confront, and it's the same issue, is this follows. I know what characterizes the yud ches dafar. Pashta Yisuro b'chol Yisrael. If in fact the Isser takes root, then no beis din can undo it. Fine. And under what circumstances can a beis din undo the takan of another beis din, even if it's not gadol b'chacham of a minyan? Well, I'll use this gemara again. Lo pashta Yisuro b'chol Yisrael. Great. So I have one question. Where is it that you can undo the words of another, the ruling of another beis din, but you need gadol b'chacham minyan? If pashat isur b'chol Yisrael, nobody can undo it. Mm-hmm. If lo pashat isur b'chol Yisrael, then you don't even need gadol b'chacham of a minyan.
You don't need it.
That's the problem that all of the Rishonim are facing. Mm-hmm. Now, one more gemara before we start to look at the Rishonim is the gemara on the bottom of the page, the gemara in Beitza. Normally, every sugya in Shas, as far as I know, I don't think I've missed something on this, not because of my bikias, but because you can do Bar Ilan search too. Everywhere the Gemara talks about a gzeira, a davar shebeminyan undoing it, they always talk about gadol b'chacham, they always invoke that idea. The more popular expression, I think, that we often use is that davar shebeminyan, tzarech minyan acher latira, without reference to gadol b'chachma, but the idea that something that was nigzar b'minyan, b'minyan of a beis din, of a Sanhedrin, requires another beis din, another Sanhedrin to undo. If I'm not mistaken, there's only one sugya where that expression, well, I don't know if it's quoted elsewhere, but it's certainly really explicated upon, this idea of davar shebeminyan, tzarech minyan acher latira. It comes from this one sugya in Beitza. And the sugya in Beitza is dealing with the following issue. Yom Tov Sheini Shel Galios. So, specifically, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is an odd bird in the Yom Tov Sheinis. In fact, when you learn the Mishnah, just as Derech Agav, when you learn Mishnayis, you should realize when the Mishnah wants to present scenarios of 1, 2, or 3 days of holy days in a row, they always have one day is either Shabbos or Yom Tov, 2 days is Yom Tov Samach L'Shabbos, 3 days is always Rosh Hashanah Samach L'Shabbos. It never talks about the other Yom Tovim. The reason for that is because the Mishnah was written in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, the only time they had 2 days was Rosh Hashanah. It's obvious once you say state it, but when you learn the Mishnayos in several places and it doesn't come up, in Shabbos and Erevin, you're wondering why. It's not that they thought it necessarily had a different din, but it's because it never came up in the Mishnah. But, nonetheless, we do treat Rosh Hashanah differently than we do the other 2 days. And the reason for that is based upon a story that is told, I believe, in the Mishnayos in Rosh Hashanah, in the fourth parak, that the Rosh Hashanah is unique because all other Yom Tovim, you set Rosh Chodesh, at least, forget Yom Kippur, because we don't keep 2 days Yom Kippur, well, most of us don't, but Sukkot and Pesach, you have 2 weeks between the Kviyas HaChodesh, and it's just a question of letting people know. But Rosh Hashanah is a trickier bird, because Rosh Hashanah, when the day starts, nobody knows, actually, whether it's Rosh Hashanah or not. And so the Mishnah tells a story that when you bring the Tamid Shel Shachar in Rosh Hashanah, it's not Rosh Hashanah yet. You're not doing Malacha because you're afraid the day is going to become Rosh Hashanah. It might be Yom Tov, but you can't bring Karbanos and the Musafin of Rosh Hashanah in the morning because you don't know that it's Rosh Hashanah, in which case it's Baal Tosaf, or the Karbanos are no good, it's Chulun Bazara. So the Tamid Shel Shachar was basically done in a normal, like any Vacha Dikah day. But what will happen is that if the Edom come at some point later in the morning or in the early afternoon, then they'll make it Rosh Hashanah, they'll bring the Musafim, and then they bring the Tamid Shel Bein Arvayim, the Shir Shel Yom is going to be that of Rosh Hashanah, not of the whatever day of the week it is. So the Mishnah says that one time, the Edom went Ishtahu Lavo, and Niskalkalu Halavim Bashir. Things got messed up, why it was such a big deal. They said the wrong Shira, but it was really a big deal. And they made a Takana from hence to forth, that if Edom come in Amir Chalamala, Nogin Oseim Kodesh Ulamacha Kodesh, they don't accept the Edom after Mincha. meaning after 9.5 hours. At that point, they decide today is not Rosh Hashanah, and they bring the Reyei Karbanos. But should the Edom show up, you're not allowed to do Malacha the rest of the day, even though the next day is really Rosh Hashanah. That was only a concern when you had a Beis HaMikdash standing. But once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so then it wasn't an issue anymore. And so then they say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, one of his 10 takanos was, he was Mesaki, and they would be Mekablam the Edom once again on Mincha L'Malah. Now, what emerged before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's takana is that there were times in which you kept 2 days of Rosh Hashanah even though you knew which day was actually Rosh Hashanah. In other words, you would be keeping the latter part of the first day of Rosh Hashanah knowing full well that the next day was Rosh Hashanah. There was no suffix anymore. And because of that, there is a stream of thought amongst the Tanaim that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are to be regarded as Kedusha Achas, not as a regular Sveika Dioma. And that produces any number of outcomes, many of which are chumras, not all of which are chumras. What? Yom HaRichta. It produces both chumras and kulas, potentially, if you really believe in it. It creates the question we have about Shechiyanu on the second day. But the relevant issue for the Gemara and Beitza is the following. I'll give you the common, actually, the useful thing, Bisman Hazeh, that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that you can do. Didn't work out this year, but when we get the Yom Tov is Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. So you're supposed to make an Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday, and this way you can cook on Friday for Shabbos. Ah, but you forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday. What do? So one time you rely upon the rabbi's Erev Tavshilin, so you only get to do it once. Fine. What happens the next year? You forgot to make the Erev Tavshilin
on
Wednesday.
You can't depend on the rabbi more than one?
Well, that's what there's a Gemara in Beitza that says that the first time there was some Summa who forgot to make Erev Tavshilin, and he felt terrible, and whichever Amora said, you rely, I did it for you as well. But it happened a second time, he said, you're a poshea, I didn't have you in mind. So tradition has it, you only get to rely upon it once. Not entirely clear, but anyway. So the second Yom Tov, you forget to make Tavshilin, and it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night comes, and your wife is screaming at you, idiot, how did you forget to make the Erev Tavshilin? What are we going to do? So he went to yeshiva, he learned a little bit, so he knows the following. I'm okay in this situation. I'm going to make the Erev Tavshilin tomorrow or tonight on Thursday. Why? Because you can't make an Erev Tavshilin on Friday for Shabbos, but you can make an Erev Tavshilin on Thursday and say the following. If today is really Yom Tov, then tomorrow is not, and I don't need an Erev Tavshilin to cook on Friday, a Vachadika Friday, for Shabbos. And if today is not really Yom Tov, so now I'm making the Erev Tavshilin now, so Miman of Shachar works. Can't do that on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, the Mishnah talks about this. This is not a case that's terribly common, unless I doubt in Teaneck there might be a few people who raise chickens. I don't know if anybody in the Upper East Side raises chickens in their premises. I know it's become. I just don't know if it's made it to the. Okay.
Oh yeah.
I know that in general, but olam, it's been a big thing. So Aaron, you've got chickens. Okay, it's a new phase in life, and you've got chicken coops on your thing, and you know you want fresh eggs. And the chicken lays an egg, the hen lays an egg on Yom Tov. You can't eat it on Yom Tov. It's on Shabbos, you can't eat it on Shabbos. But the chicken lays an egg on the first day of Yom Tov. And now comes the second day of Yom Tov. So you have a chachma, you realize, here's the way it works. If today is chol, then Beit Shanol the Bechol was mutter. And if yesterday was, if today is really Yom Tov, well, guess what? When it comes to second day of Yom Tov, if the egg was laid on the first day, and you say, well, if yesterday wasn't Yom Tov, then it was Nol the Bechol then. If today, and, I'm sorry, I think I said it wrong. If it was born on the first day, if the egg was laid on the first day, on the second day, you take the egg and say, look, said if yesterday was Yom Tov, then today is Chol, no problem. Is the no mux, there's no nola, there's nothing. And if today is really Yom Tov, well, not a problem. Yesterday wasn't, so it's not a Beit Shanol of Yom Tov. Move on. Right. So that's the Sveika of the Yom of the Tanah you can make. By Beit Set works L'chulei Alma, because you don't have to do anything. The Rambam says, Bisman Hazeh, when Yom Tov Sheni becomes almost like a Vadai, you can't do the Erev Tavshilin that way. We don't pass like the Rambam. We assume you can do the Erev Tavshilin also. That's a very difficult Rambam. But anyway, so the Gemara says that the Gemara Amoraim have a discussion. After Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai restored Rosh Hashanah to its original din, and the only reason you keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is because of a Sveika Dioma, right? You're keeping the first day because maybe the Edom will come, and if the Edom don't show up, then you keep the second day. So then, by right, the Beit Shanolda on the first day of Rosh Hashanah should be Muteres on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So there was a Machlokas Amoraim whether or not that remained in the Takana remained in place. And now, when you go to the bottom source, Rabbi Yosef Amar, Af bitakanas Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ve'eilach beitz asura. My time, have a davar shebeminyan v'chol davar shebeminyan tzerach minyan achar latiro. So apparently Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai can make a takana to be mekabel the edim and mincha l'mala, but he could not make a takana to be matir the isur beitza. Amar Rabbi Yosef, mina aminala, d'chsev, lecha mar lahem, shuvu lachem al-alechem. So God told Moshe, the Jewish people after Maimon Har Sinai, go back to your wives, go back to your family life. And after Maimon Har Sinai was over, and the Tkia Shofar, the long Tkia Gedola at the end that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew, so then they were all told, you can all go up on Har Sinai. No more Kedushat Har Sinai once Matan Torah is over. And Utsnan, and we have a Mishnah, originally, when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, even though Minat Torah, you were allowed to redeem Kerem Revai, the fruits of the fourth year, you bring them to Yushalayim, you eat them. It's like Maser Sheni. They made a takana that if you're within one day's walk of Yushalayim, you're not allowed to redeem Peiros Revai. You have to bring them to Yushalayim. Why? Because they wanted Shuke Yushalayim to be Mutarim Peiros. They wanted to be all decorated with fruits. And if everybody would redeem their Peiros, there'd be no fruits there. So, Kerem Revai Ola Yushalayim, Mahalach Yomechad Lechotzad, Vezoi Tchuma. What is the one-day circumference? Elas min hadarom ba'kravas min hatzafon lod min amar v'yardim min amizrach. V'amar ula v'itema rabab charna mar miyochanam. What's the reason for this mission? Matam k'dein la'ater shuke Yushalayim b'peiros. Fine, v'tanya, but then we have a braisa. Kerem revai hayel rabbi Eliezer b'mizrach lod b'tzad kvar tevi. Rabbi Eliezer had a vineyard. He had peiros of revai. He didn't want to go to Yushalayim. And there's no mikdash. He wasn't going the ragel. Ubike shlaf kirel aniyim. He decided, you know what? I'll make it hefker for the aniyim to take. For them, it's free food. They'll go bring it to Yerushalayim, and they'll eat the grapes there, or they'll drink the wine there. And I don't want to deal with it. Amr lo talmida. Rabbi Lezer's talmidim said to him, Rabbi, kvar nimnu alacha chaveirecha v'itiru. They undid the gzeira, meaning the gzeira about having to bring the fruits up to Yerushalayim within a one-day circumference of Yerushalayim, one-day radius of Yerushalayim, that only applies, that takana was made in Bisman, that was based on Mikdash, you wanted everybody came to Yerushalayim, your chaveirim already undid the gzeira. Man chaveirecha, who are the chaveirim? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Taima de nimnu. Holo nimnu lo, only because kvar nimnu alecha chaverech vitur. It wasn't muta memela. You don't say, since the reason no longer applies, you don't have to deserve the gzera. No, it's because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his beisdin were matir the gzera, so therefore you don't have to do it anymore. So you see from that if lo nimnu lo, you see davar shebeminyan yitzarach min yachel atira. And then they go on to explain why that Kaddish Baruch works by Dinim Darius as well. Kaddish Baruch Hu said, you have to separate from your wives before Matan Torah. So why you would have thought after Matan Torah was over? Of course, Matan Torah is over. Go back to your wives. Or you can't go up on Har Sinai. What, it's in Isser Olamis? No, it's because the Shechina is there. Once the Shechina leaves Har Sinai, of course you can go up. Nonetheless, davar shebeminyan yitzarach min acher latira. One might, of course, argue here, going back, the Gemara here doesn't talk about Gadab HaChacham HaMinyan, but it's clear that you don't need... There are two possibilities going on here. Either you don't need Gadol B'Chachma Minyan, or if somebody is equal to the previous Beis Din, then that's called Gadol B'Chachma Minyan. Why? Because the Ribbono Shalom, presumably before and after Maimon Har Sinai, was equal, if we were allowed to say such thing, was equal to himself. And therefore, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu could be Matir, that's what she prohibited, you clearly don't need Gadol B'Chachma Minyan here. Is that because Shaveh is called... Gadol B'Chachma Minyan is the same as Shavah, or because this Gemara doesn't require Gadol B'Chachma Minyan? That's a really important question. Now, forget the Ribbono Shalom for a moment. What about Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai? Was he Gadol B'Chachma Minyan?
Of who?
From whoever made the Gezerah about not bringing the Peiros, not redeeming Peiros Revai within a day's radius of Yerushalayim. Gemara doesn't say. Was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai greater than his predecessors or not? It turns out it might be a Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ravid.
If he was greater.
Where the Ravid just takes as a given that, of course, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't on par with the previous generations. And the Rambam doesn't say anything, but the Kesef Mishnah just says who? You know, so the Ravid, of course, said that, you know, Hillel HaZaken had 80 Talmidim, the greatest of whom was Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, and the least of whom was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he knew Gan's Shas. But, you know, so the Ravid says, obviously, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't a... And the Kesef says, what? You know, in Havayas Tabayev Rabbah, maybe Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a greater Talmud Chacham. Maybe in the esoteric stuff, he wasn't as great as Yonasan ben Uziel and so on. So anyway, but the point is, in terms of the crucial point is how to read the sugya. Is the sugya which says Tzarech Minyan Achar Latiro, does this mean Gadol B'Chachma Minyan? Which means A, that Shaveh is called Gadol B'Chachma Minyan because the Ribbono Shalom is the same as before and after, and B, and you have to say Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was in fact greater than his predecessors. If you don't want to say, if you say you don't need Gadol B'Chachma Minyan, then it's not necessary to claim that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was greater than his predecessors, nor do you have to argue that Shavin two batei din that are equivalent, one can always overturn the words of the other one. You don't have to argue that. But what it does mean then, if you're going to argue that this is not gadol b'chachma minyan, this is just minyan acher latiro, it means we have a category in this gemara, namely the gzeira of reperos revai around Yerushalayim, which is subject to the rule only of minyan acher latiro. You don't even need gadol b'chachma minyan. Not only can a beis din undo it, it doesn't even have to gadol b'chachma minyan. You just need a beis din acher. You need minyan acher latiro. Why would this be different than some of the other gzeiros? The answer the Ravid claims is because here the tam was batela. The Ravid says that when the tam is batel, you don't need gadol b'chachma minyan. It's enough to have a minyan acher. Okay? That doesn't you still have to explain three categories. You have to explain when do you need any other beis din, when do you need gadol b'chachma minyan, and when will no beis din be able to do the trick. But these, up until what we see now, are basically all of the Gemaras, all the relevant Mekoros and Chazal for trying to put the puzzle pieces together.
How would we define the Tam as Bethel? I understand what the words mean. How would you define it?
So, I'll give an example. I would say that the concern that created the need for the original Gzera is no longer present. So, if the purpose was Kedei La'ater Shukei Yerushalayim Baperos, and nobody, that's relevant only when, that's Bishas HaRegel, and people are not Ola LaRegel anymore to Yerushalayim because there's no Beis HaMikdash. So then, and during that time, it doesn't, there's no point in having Yerushalayim.
How far can you push that? Could you say Kitnium?
So, theoretically, if you would argue that no one will get confused anymore, and that nobody grows a certain thing, that would be that we could debate the Metzias, but yes, certainly take the other examples. You know, Maimon Har Sinai had its kedusha, and husbands and wives had to separate because of kedushas Matan Torah and so on, and kedusha Shrina, and when that's no longer present, it wouldn't apply. Or let's take an example from the medieval period. Again, one can agree or disagree with the Metzias, but the claim of the Balei HaTosfos that you're allowed to clap and dance and bang on Shabbos and Yom Tov because we are not Beki and B'tikun Klishir. They prohibited clapping because we're afraid I'll get so enthusiastic and so ecstatic. I'm going to grab my guitar, start strumming, playing the music. The string's going to snap. I'm going to tie it. So today, most people don't know how to do that, so it's really a far-fetched gzeira. Right? You can come up with a lot of things where you could argue that the reason no longer applies. And again, how we treat things halachically obviously varies, and that's what I want to talk about. I'll give you the example that we've spoken about many times, which we still observe the gzeira, right? The gzeira on Yistam Yenam, right? In this country, the gzeira on Yistam Yenam in the context of industrial wine makes absolutely no sense, right? If we were to structure the gzeira of Yistam Yenam today, we would say that purchasing wine should always be permitted. Drinking wine or maybe all kinds of alcohol with non-Jews should be prohibited, right? If you were going to make such a gzera today for the purpose that Chazal made it, to avoid chasnus and to avoid concerns of Avodah Zarah. So Avodah Zarah is not really relevant in American society, of that kind at least. And chasnus is irrelevant in commercially produced things. Right. That's just not you have no idea. You don't know who the vintner is. You're not going to marry... You know, the vintner, you're not going to marry the vintner's daughter, whatever it is, right? So those are situations where we would argue that butla
exam. Engaging in eating together with them? The wine, drinking?
That's how we would have made the gzeira, but that's not the
way
people drink. People drink yayin mavushal with together with non-Jews. I told the whole that story already about friends of ours. His brother, you know, was dating a non-Jewish woman. They invited him over to the Seder, right? And they had to make sure that all the yayin was mavushal. We talk about the deepest of ironies here, right? Okay. So I think we could argue about Pratam and Xera, but yes. I know. You're
I'm not arguing anything. I just want to understand.
Yes. Yes. So I think that one could make a very a strong argument that the reason for the Xera of Kitney is the way food is produced today. The mixing, I think you can make a strong argument. The confusion, you know, I would say it's not clear whether people, you're not going to make the mistake, but there might be people who could make the mistake. You never know. I know of a story, it's actually a Memphis story. I don't know who it was about someone who baked this incredible cake for Pesach. People loved it. It was absolutely delicious. And they asked her, how do you make it? So she went, she got kashal Pesach flour, and that's what she made it with it. Didn't realize how you get, I don't think you can normally buy it. Kashal Pesach flour was actually regular flour. It was just Shamur min hachimutz actually made chametz dagan gamur, right? It wasn't matzah meal flour. So you'd be surprised what people can do unwittingly. So I don't know, but naniach, if you were to argue that it's not, that the reason no relevant people would never get confused today and so on.
Thing within the last 100 years that we've done that it falls into this category?
New gazeros or old gazeros that we've undone?
Recently, yes.
What about vitamins? I mean, the grinding of the vitamins on Shabbos, you know.
So that would be an interesting example, although it may be start to come undone. There is a minority opinion in postgim. I don't think it's the broadly acceptable medicines on Shabbos. I think Ezra Chaim Na'eh was the one who said, said that there's no Xeris for four anymore because people don't grind their medicines. Right now, ironically, the way the world is moving, we're moving a little, I don't know if they actually grind, moving back in that direction, right? Moving back to the source of the food and so on. But there's an example where someone, again, I think it's not a broadly accepted opinion, but there's someone who claimed that the reason doesn't apply. And I think we would all agree that today, forgetting about what funny things people might be doing now, that the Xer is not really shayach. People do not, it's such a miut for anybody who grinds medicine.
Rabbi, you don't take an aspirin on Shabbos.
I wouldn't. If I'm only a mechosh balma, I don't take medicine on Shabbos for that.
You're in our house for Shabbos, and you had a headache, and I offered you aspirin, and you said, no, you don't do it on Shabbos.
Okay. Fine. So there are those who would argue that.
Between somebody taking something upon themselves personally and pushing it on to the whole
community. I would just say, in this case, if you ask me, I think that the Xeris still is in effect. But if one of the interesting things, and I don't know how to measure this, we'll talk about this more the next shiur on this topic, is, in other words, if you go do a poll in the community, so how many, a lot of people probably do it. I mean, the question is, are they doing it out of ignorance, or does it reflect the ready...
Well, the bigger question is, what's the community?
Okay, but I'm going to say that people are Shomer Shabbos and Shomer Kashrus. Okay. That I think is a fair definition, and I think that's a reasonable definition. And then start to look around and see what are people actually doing, and then you have to weigh that against how much, to what extent do you say, well, that's just because they don't know, versus Hanach Lam Yisrael Nav Neviim Heim Bnei Neviim Heim. Right? There's always that point when certain kinds of practices change. Now, it won't happen with things that are public ritual, because when somebody tries to change something, all the alarm bells go off. But in things that are fundamentally private practice, how you figure out at a certain point which posek wakes up and says, you know what, people aren't doing this because it's not really shaykh, and I think it's mutter. Right? I don't know. If someone turned around to me and said, I've done a survey and about 95% of the, and then you have to decide if it's the non-Orthodox community versus the yeshivish community, how do you weigh that? It's not an easy one to weigh. The answer in the end is, when someone with a, figuratively speaking, long enough beard and black enough hat, and I don't care whether they wear a hat or beard or not, if someone like Rav Nachum Rabinovich comes along and says, yeah, it's mutter, you're going to get a lot of B'nai Torah who will do it. So there always is, what we're going to talk, the more interesting part of our discussion, which may also be sometimes more frustrating, we'll get to in Shear 2 and if there's a Shear 3 in it, but let's assume that we can make a reasonable agreement as to when the reason might not be shayach anymore. There may be cases where we just disagree on that particular issue. But if you took medicine as an example, I think it's a fairly strong argument that the reason doesn't apply anymore. And if you're going to observe the Xera, it's only because Davar Shebaminyan Sarach Minyanach Alatir. It's only on those grounds. Okay, so now we have to figure out, how do you put the puzzle pieces together? So today I'm going to leave, we'll try to do Tosus, and we'll stop with that. Tosus, I gave you Tosus a Rosh and Gittin. Tosus is commenting on Shmuel's Din, so remember, you got to keep it as a place marker. Shmuel by Prisbal, if he had had Gadol B'Chachma Minyan, he would have undone Hillel's Takana. So Tosus says, on the top of the back side of the sheet, first source on the Roman numeral 2. Tosus HaRosh Gittin Daf Lamed Roman Beis. V'im Tomar, Heichi Mayri, what's Shmuel's case? What's the case of Prisbal? E de Toshat B'chol Yisrael, if it is spread out, and if the Prisbal was broadly accepted, Afilu Gadol Mimenu Eino Yochal Levatel, even a greater Beis Din, even if Shmuel was a Yasher Cheli, even if he had greater Chayel than Hillel, it wouldn't matter. Kedamrina beperakim amidim gabe yurchas dover the pashad isuran da filo yaver leo bestino in shomenla. So right now in the havamin of Tosus in the kasha, Tosus is assuming that the definition of yurchas dover is pashad isura b'chol Yisrael. The e the lo pashat b'chol Yisrael, but if the prisbal wasn't poshet, Afilu based in Katan Yachalavato, Kidamrin and Hossam, Rabbi Huda Nisia Hitira Shemen, Mishum de la Pasha Risura Bechol Yisrael. Now, the truth be told, the Kash is not against Shmuel. The Kash is against the Mishnah Nadios. How can the Mishnah establish a category, which the Gemara quotes in a couple of places, that you need Gadol B'chach V'minyan, but Gadol B'chach V'minyan is enough? Where does that belong? But that's Tosis' Kasha, which emerges really right out of the Gemara Nevo Dezara. V'yesh Lomar, the Hodem Mefaresh Hossam, Od Taima Harina, Lefi Shelo Hayu Rova Tzibur Yechol on Lamenbo. Tosis says, if you read the Gemara carefully, there are actually two different statements that are made in the Gemara. First, the Gemara said, was it Pashat Isuro Berov HaTzibur? And then it says they were so mech upon Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadik, Rabbi Gamliel, who said that in gozering zeiver al tzibur in kain rov hatzibur yecholim lamod bo, which is interesting because I would have said that those two are hainuach. If the tzibur are not yecholim lamod bo, it's not going to be pashat b'chol hatzibur. If they yecholim, I could envision it's yecholim lamod bo, but they don't want to. I could see such a scenario. But when I read the Gemara, I assumed that the two were the same thing. They were just different viewpoints. One from the vantage point of the Beis Din, and one from the vantage point of the community, meaning look what the community is doing. In effect, Beis Din, before they make exam, they're supposed to consider, will it be pashat isur? Is it something that tzibur will accept and is capable of doing or not? But in theory, you could have something where you could have one or the other. You could have something which is oppressive on the tzibur. They're doing it, but it's really, they can barely function with it. That's ein rov hatzibur yechol lamod bo. And you can have something which is, even if you hold a lamod bo, it's low pashat because they don't like it. They're not upset. They're upset with the rabbis now. They're not interested in listening to them on this issue.
No, that by all the kzeiros, maybe they were masna. Like we said before, call a road to Levato.
That's a separate question. That's sort of like the...
Maybe they did it by everything.
We have no way of knowing that. Sometimes the Rishonim will try to invoke it to explain. There's one case where one of them, say, Kalim and the Rambam, invoke such a logic. But that's the problem, is that's like, you know, you can always pull that teretz out, and it does the entire question.
It makes sense that they should have...
But it does seem that Beis Din did not... The assumption of Psak is not that Gzeiros were generally made contingent. The default option that Poskim operate with since the time of the Gemara is that Gzeiros are what we call mukhlatot. They are unconditionally binding unless there's evidence that they are mutna'im. They are conditional or dependent, right? Why Beis Din didn't do things that way? I could envision why. It's not crazy why, because the problem is, if you make a gzera conditional, who decides, you know, who decides when it's the reason still applies, right? You could have chaos, right? So, anyway, we'll get a chance, I think, to talk about that a little bit more, but in the meantime, Tosus says that these two are separable issues. In other words, there are two things that are necessary to make a gzera basically super binding. Number one, it has to be a gzera sheyachol on tzibur lamabot. Number two is it has to be pasha deisur b'chol Yisrael. So Tosus says the following, that v'cheimon dahavu tarti, if you have two tarti l'reisa, number one, it's lo pasha deisur b'chol Yisrael. Number two, it's too difficult to gzera for people to observe. Then, afilu based in katan yachol hater. That's Rabbi Huda Nasiya. Shemin shalakim was lo pasha, and it was too difficult. Aval pashat v'en yecholin. Or yecholin v'lo pashat. If you have one where the gzera, either it is observable, but it's not, it hasn't been accepted, or it has been accepted, but it's really too difficult, then gadol yochal lahatir v'lo katan. Then a based in gadol is able to be matir, but not a based in katan. And Tosus doesn't spell it out, but obviously, if it's yecholin lamabo, and it's pashta b'chol Yisrael, so then that's what definition of yudchas davar is. So Tosus right now in the Havamina started out on the assumption that yudchas davar means pashta b'chol Yisrael, and says, what's going on? Tosus says, no. Yud Chastavar means Yecholon Lamabo and Pashta B'chol Yisrael. If you're missing one, you need a Gadol B'chachamin to undo it. If you're missing both, any Beis Din can undo it. But now Tosa says, not so fast. He says, Miyu Teima Lo Markein, Kevan De Prisbol Tov La'Niyim La'Shirim. Tosa says, number one, the Takana Prisbol, the Gemara says, they darshan etymologically, Prisbol Le'Bute, a Takana for the poor and the rich. It's good for both of them. So Tosa says, if that's the case, if it's Tov La'Niyim La'Shirim, Yecholon Lamanbo, Lamalo Pashat. Presumably Prisbol was Pashat B'chol Yisrael, and it's Yecholon Lamanbo, because it's good for people. It's good for the Aniyim, because they can borrow money. It's good for the Ashirim, because they can get their money and collect it, and they won't violate the Asir in the Torah. So And yet, Shmuel says what? If I had a gata b'chaf a minyan, I'd be able to undo it. So you see that even if it's pashta, and yichol lamenbo, that's not the definition of yurches davar. So Tosa says, menira de dafka v'dvar iser v'heter, kigon yurches davar and yichol levatel in pashat, avon milsta de mamona, kigon prusbol v'chayotze bo gada yachol levatel v'lo katan. So now Tosa has a different approach. Tosa says, what I said before is correct, that yurches davar means pashta and yichol lamenbo, but you have to add one more criteria. It has to be iser v'heter. But if it's not iser v'heter, if it's a takana and dine mamonos, so then you follow the general rule that if it's yicholin, or if it's yicholin or pashat or both, then you need gada b'chach v'minyim. But if it's ein yichol lamenbo and lo pashta, so then any based in can do it.
Isn't principle? Could principal not be a category of Issa V'Heter?
So you could have made that argument, but it's in other words, even to the extent that the Issa V'Heter, Gezel is also Issa V'Heter. Right? Stealing is awesome.
Right.
A lot of people don't seem to know that. And the joke goes about if only Lo Sigzal had been a footnote in the Mishnah Berurah, more people would observe it, right? I say, if it were in Yoredei instead of being Choshen Mishpat, then more people would be observing it. So,
okay.
You are correct, though, on some level. There seems to be an added element to this, but fundamentally it's Dine Mamonos. Ribis is Isser V'Heter. But the Shemitah Ksafim is fundamentally Dine Mamonos. Satosa's second answer is basically like the first answer, that the Yud Ches Davar means Pasht B'chol Yisrael and Yichol Laman Bo, but with the condition it also has to be Isser V'Heter not Dine Mamonos. Then Tosus gives one last answer, which totally turns everything upside down. V'od Yesh Lomar, the Dafka B'Yud Ches Davar Hu Den Yochol Levatel. It's only those 18 things. 18 things is not a broad category. It's not a type. 18 things are those 18 things. Why? In the Yerushalmi says they were killing each other. They literally, there was bloodshed over this. There was physical warfare between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And because of that, Damrinan Hassam, Tana Rabbi Yeshua, Mitalmid Beis Shammai, Tana Rabbi Yeshua, Mitalmid Beis Shammai, Amdu Lahem Lamata, Vayu Horgi Mitalmid Beis Hillel. And therefore, they decided those 18 things were not, it had too much bad blood associated with it. Therefore, the Yud Ches Davar were immutable. But everything else, you need a based in Gadol B'chach V'minyan. And then, of course, I don't know if Tosus would say, it could just be, if Lo Pashta, B'chol Yisrael, you don't have to get into the distinction between Yachol Eino Yachol. Tosus might still hold that way, but once you say that, then basically there are really only two categories. There's that which requires Gadol B'chach V'minyan, and that which requires any minyan. Gadol B'chach V'minyan is Pashat Yisur B'chol Yisrael, and Lo Pashat Yisur B'chol Yisrael, then any other Beis Din can undo it, and the only exception to this discussion are those 18 things, but nothing beyond that. Okay, so we'll stop with this. In a few weeks, Memorial Day weekend, when we resume this topic, we're then going to have to figure out how the Rambam constructs things, and then we're going to move to talk about the authority of the Bavli, and then on to our kinds of Bisman Hazeh, how we deal with things that haven't changed, that have changed, what can change, and so on. Okay.